Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail Cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm hanging in there, Josh. I officially moved this weekend, so my life is kind of in disarray. But it was like when I rearranged my whole living life, I felt like I also had to rearrange my fantasy team. So I wildcarded going into 33, just like you. So we have a lot to debrief on as we're sort of like coming out of game week 33. Like, how did things go?
Yep.
Are we feeling good? Home stretch is the home stretch, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a you've moved this weekend. You've had a pretty chaotic season, and so you know it's no problem, Brandon. When there is only one set of audio track prints, that's when I carried you on this week's pod.
Okay? Very so, good. Yes.
So you and I both wildcarded this weekend. We're just going to jump right into it. Okay. Last week we did a full on Super League thing. If you want to hear our thoughts on that, that was obviously before it collapsed. It was good to do it. And then we recorded a Patreon supporters pod 3 days later, and it was like, oh my God, I have a wild card this week, and I haven't even thought, like, I was so distracted by the the Super League stuff that I could not stop reading about it. It was so fascinating. I mean, it was horrible, obviously. It was horrifying and fascinating at the same time. And so I was just reading so much about it. And finally, like Wednesday, we recorded this pod, and I was like, I am not ready to wildcard right now, but I kind of had to. And you know, in the end, you know, so the question for, you know, that we'll kick things off here was from Boston Properties: anatomy of a post wildcard. What went right and wrong? Were there any glaring errors you could have foreseen looking back? So, you know, I think for me, the biggest thing was that I wildcarded because a wildcard saved me from bringing Mo Salah in on a hit. And that honestly was about the biggest reason. I didn't have a terrible team going into this week. I mean, I ended up wildcarding out players like Luke Shaw, who I would have liked to have. But you know, I felt like what I really needed to do was bring in Mo Salah and Iheanacho for that matter too. And, you know, I really felt like those were the two players who were missing my team, and I captained Salah and I got 9 points. And so, you know, I feel like, you know, especially when you're sort of, you know, and then one of the competitive spots in your mini league, say, like any 4 points burned at this point in the season really feels like something you have to like think about very, very carefully, because it, you know, really can be the difference between, you know, winning or losing or second or third place or whatever. And so, To me, it was worth it just for that rationale. But the team I actually wildcarded into was pretty frustrating. I mean, you and I ended up actually wildcarding into a very similar team. We both have Iheanacho and Vardy tomorrow, so I think we should add that as a caveat. But I'm on 39 points, which, I mean, it's a kind of low scoring game week in general. It looks like the average is 26 points. I'm actually down like 14 spots. I'm around 5.2K right now. And I guess I moved a little closer to 5.3K overall after that. So, you know, really pretty neutral. And then, you know, I've got Vardy tomorrow. I was only 33% owned. So I'm hoping that he comes through for me. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, Romain Saiss, I mean, you know, Wolves just got annihilated at home. I'm just kind of completely out of the blue. I mean, it was sort of like, I mean, congrats to all these people who apparently had Chris Wood. Did you know that he was such a popular fan? I mean, these are people that you and I are friends with and follow. I should have known that.
Yeah.
I feel like our friends let us down, really, Brandon.
They didn't
tell us that Chris Wood was about to go out for 20 points.
You don't hang out on the New Zealand fantasy Reddit all day like me. I mean, I'm all about that Kiwi. I'm on that Kiwi action, that Kiwi juice. So Chris Wood is just all me and my friends talk about for sure. And Chris Wood is that type of player who will elude any wild card. So I had a Vidra version of my wild card. Never did I have a Chris Wood, because you look at Burnley, and Burnley is, you know, I don't want to disrespect Burnley because they always have something to offer with fantasy, but you always get the cheaper version of the Burnley asset. And Chris Wood hasn't been in that Iheanacho vein of form. So how could you have seen that coming? And for me, the idea behind wildcarding going into game week 33, it was kind of a staring contest, right? Of like, who's going to blink first, the wild card or me? And I just ultimately had to make a move. And, you know, as much as we rely on people like Ben Crellin to figure out, well, what double game weeks and blanks remain for the rest of the season, nothing was really crystallizing at a point where it strategically made sense. So slightly different logic, but would agree, like, just play the wild card now and see what you can gain. So the issue for me was I really didn't know where to turn with a lot of parts of my fantasy team. I knew I definitely on the wild card wanted to bring in Alexander Arnold and Salah. That was a done deal. Beyond that, Emi Martinez. Beyond that, it was a lot of guesswork. And then when you look at that Burnley Wolves match, I think that does enforce the point about a lot of the marginal fantasy game sometimes coming down to guesswork. Like, are you going to be able to predict when the wheels ultimately fall off of a Wolverhampton form? And it just happened to be in game week 33.
Totally. And it wasn't like Wolves were like this, you know, sort of dominant, but like they had put together a nice run. And, you know, maybe in hindsight, keeping clean sheets to Fulham and Sheffield shouldn't have been so telling. I mean, just to go back to the Chris Wood thing for a second. I mean, that's a tricky one for me, because that really goes back to what I think is a difficult question to answer when we start taking fantasy very seriously. like, I don't know. I mean, it's like sometimes I like to pretend that I don't take fantasy seriously, but clearly we do. We have this podcast. Sure. But, you know, like, it's sort of like Chris, like, is like, you know, first of all, Chris Wood's underlying stats always look good, right? Because he's always at the top of these stats charts. And you know, it doesn't often borne out in the results, right? Mm-hmm. And he's been, you know, in incredible form I think he's got like 6 goals and 3 assists in his last 5 matches. Now, granted, 3 goals and 1 assist for today's match. But regardless, he's been, you know, kind of filling the score box,
the box score.
And yeah. But the question is always like, you know, and so like, but for me, I had Chris Wood sort of buying into this earlier this season. I had him for like 5 game weeks. He blanked every single game week that I had him. And I was like, okay, right. Like, I just don't want a Burnley forward. I just don't want that in my life. And so I kind of, you know, and so sometimes there's a situation you fall in where you're like, well, am I biased because of a bad experience? Or did my experience teach me that this isn't a right move, you know? And like, I mean, I don't want to get like too caught up in just one single result here. You know, like, you know, it was clearly, he had a, you know, great, great match and a great day. But you know, I feel like that's something I often struggle with, you know, like I had a player that didn't do well for me. Therefore that player is dead to me. And clearly you don't want to think that way, right? You want it to be sort of like a thinking in the back of your head, but that can sort of bias you too much against players that might really help your team.
Totally. And Burnley is one of those teams where fantasy, if you're in FPL for the long haul, a lot of what you're buying into are consistent assets. It's so hard to pick that one flare up from a marginal player like Chris Wood. Wasn't this around the same time that the last season when Mikel Antonio went off for his 4-goal spurt toward the end of the season? I mean, after the restart.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
So there's always going to be that type of player that really does. And here's the question. Like, you can look back at what happened with Chris Wood. You can go back last season and look at what happened with Mikel Antonio. The question now that we have to talk about, as we will inevitably preview game week 34, is what do we do with this Chris Wood performance? Do we talk about it? Do we rationalize what it means to suddenly get Chris Wood into your team? Or do you just chalk it up to, hey, listen, this happens every season. Let's move on.
It's a good question because we've already talked about Chris Wood on this podcast more than we had in a running order than we planned on talking about. And so I guess this is the point. It's like sometimes you just have to talk about Chris Wood even if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Okay. Seems like a nice guy. As you said, we love our Kiwis. Big fans of Flight of the Conchords. It's all great.
100%.
But I am not really on the Chris Wood bandwagon movie. I mean, the problem is everything has to kind of, like, I don't know. I mean, you know, Dwight McNeil being in better form helps him a little bit too. Okay, here's what I'll say. I will not be bringing in Chris Wood. I won't do it. It's not going to happen. I cannot imagine it happening. Maybe at home to Leeds in game week 36. Maybe there's a situation where I do that. I'm not going to do that before then, however.
Yeah.
And so if you want to bring in Chris Wood, it seems like he's in good form. They play West Ham at home. That seems like a reasonable fixture. They play Fulham away in 35. It's a good run. It really is. But I won't be doing it. And Brandon, what about you? Are you going to be bringing in Chris Wood?
Well, it's a good segue into our second icebreaker for the episode that comes from FPL Ralph, who asks, with 5 game weeks left this season, what will Josh and Brandon be doing to make fantasy fun again for these 5 game weeks? Now, when I looked at Ralph's question, my thought was, to make fantasy fun for the rest of the season, I'm going to start backing away from Bruno Fernandes, from Mo Salah, from Kevin De Bruyne. I really want to focus on Ollie Watkins, Patrick Bamford, Rafinha, Lingard. I want to focus on these cheaper assets because I see so many, Iheanacho, I see so many of them doing well. And that to me is where the fun is and actually where a lot of ground is to be gained. So what you're asking me now, Josh, is does Chris Wood factor into that cohort of players? And I don't think I can say he does, because all the players that I had just mentioned from Iheanacho and Bamford and Watkins and Lingard, et cetera, have all exhibited true form over the course of not just 2 game weeks, but and you rightfully pointed out that Chris Wood is in pretty good form in the last couple of game weeks, but not to the extent that we
several,
more than 2. So maybe I'm just like trying to talk myself into it or what, but I just don't see how Chris Wood's form or Burnley's form, probably more importantly, how Burnley's form relates to that of these other players that I'm talking about.
Just imagining somebody listening to this podcast for the first time this week, and they're just like, they're 12 minutes in and they've been talking about Chris Wood the entire podcast so far. It's it's the Woodcast, Brandon. I wasn't planning on it, but here we
it's
are.
The age of Wood.
I think we should throw away the running notes and just start watching video clips of Chris Wood goals and just go into them and kind of narrate them as we go and just spend 2-3 hours, however long it takes, Brandon. Yeah. We should narrate every Chris Wood goal that he scored.
We can narrate them. Just think about the amazing clubhouse music that would be backing like the sizzle reel of Chris Wood. Now that would be, you know, just turn this podcast off right now and go watch the Chris Wood sizzle
that's
reel.
True. So, I mean, so you're not talking about taking this make fantasy fun again. I mean, the theme of this week's pod is clean slate, right? With 5 weeks left, How do we, I mean, so I guess in some ways, Chris Wood fits into that very well. Like, how do we look at everything with fresh eyes, right? It's this, like, 5 weeks, this is like Saturday at the Masters, Brandon. You know, this is like the final, the final chance, moving day. Okay. If you're going to do anything, if you're going to climb up, you know, from, and really, you know, I mean, it sort of just depends on what your goals are, but if you're 5 points, if you're in fifth place in your mini leagues and you're, you know, 45 points back from first, right? Mm-hmm. Difficult, but not impossible to make up that ground. But you really do have to think about some really creative moves. And you're going to have to get rid of people like Bruno. That's just all there is to it. You're going to have to take a chance on players like Sadio Mane, right? Like, just like you're going to move on players who could score 20 points in a game week, even if they're not in great form right now, right? There's a kind of that. This is the gamble that you are forced into when you're chasing a little bit. But I also want to talk about that just from a, you know, no matter what perspective you're in, because I think in my position, I'm actually, you know, leading in a few mini leagues, but I don't think you can just kind of rest on your laurels either. I mean, it's like the Bruno, for example, is a really interesting question. What we do with him now. And I think it's you and I have both been, I feel like, in a 10-week process of coming to terms with him maybe not being worth his insane price tag in the fantasy game, that it might be time to move on from him. But the one thing, we're going to get into that in just a second here. But the one thing I did want to ask you about is, you're not talking about make fantasy fun again, going crazy and making all these crazy moves. What happened between what I think, I mean, no offense, because I have a very similar team to you, but what I feel like you had a very template wild card, a very, you know, these are like sort of standard players. Like, what happened between Thursday and today that makes you feel like you want to, you know, break the mold?
Well, yeah, I don't want to put too much emphasis on breaking the mold, because you and I both know that I won't do it. But I think what did happen was I wildcarded largely to get in on Liverpool. I didn't feel, all I had was Jota from Liverpool. And we're about, one of the questions that we're going to tackle after the break is which teams have some really great fixtures for the run in. And Liverpool's form is one thing, but their fixtures are really outstanding. And I just felt like they were coming into it and they were going to be battling for the fourth spot.
No, their XG was like 11 in that match.
Yeah, right.
I don't know how they drew that. It's insane.
So I kind of feel like this is a trap always that managers can fall into at this point of the season, where suddenly you start creating these narratives, particularly when you are building a wild card and you start to have all of these ideas of how you're going to change the trajectory of your season. And in order to change the trajectory, you kind of have to change your thinking. And to change your thinking, you start constructing new narratives. And sure, Liverpool, players like Trent were at least coming into form. Does that totally erase everything that we have come to know about Liverpool for this entire season? It can't, and it doesn't. And that's what we ultimately saw against Newcastle, was Liverpool this season and will continue to the end of the season are a disjointed, malfunctioning, great team. And and I guess what has changed my mind since I wildcarded on Thursday and now when we're podcasting about how I need to further change for my wild card is, oh yeah, like what I knew about Liverpool, suddenly I forgot when I started wildcarding. That doesn't necessarily mean that now I need to dump all of my Liverpool assets, but the logic that gets you to build this wild card team sometimes is very imagined and engineered.
Sure. Yeah. You just want to do it. And then you kind of retroactively find a way to justify it. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, the XG, by the way, for Liverpool was 2.8 in that Newcastle match. I looked it up as you were talking, and which, you know, which is quite high, especially for a, you know, match where they only scored one time. I'm actually surprised it's not a little bit higher. I mean, the problem with them is that they are, they lack a killer instinct right now. I think that's very clear. The stakes are not high enough, I think, for them right now. And, I think that you have, you know, Trent being left out of the England squad for the March friendlies was clearly like a real shot in the arm for him, you know, and Mo Salah going for the golden boot is a, you know, thing for him as well. You know, it's like, you can like, there's some like individual things that they're chasing right now, but it doesn't feel like the team collectively is really working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I actually thought Mane and Salah passed to each other reasonably well in that match too. And, but Salah, or excuse me, Mane is just so out of form right now. It's incredible. And Firmino is just, it's even worse with him. I mean, it's kind of sad. I mean, that's, you know, he's now going to have to become, I think, you know, more of a squad player for Liverpool. And I don't think you can start him in most, you know, in big matches, you know, start like next season. And that's like, I love Firmino. Like Firmino is just like a player who I feel like is just so easy to love, right? I mean, who doesn't love a forward who doesn't care if he scores?
But you've got to admit, Josh, how good is Bobby Firmino going to look in an Inter Miami kit? And I think that's just like written in the stars.
That is true. Yeah. Well, let's give him like 3 more years at Liverpool. I think he can still do a job, but I just don't think he's a week in, week out, twice a week kind of player anymore. Yeah. Unfortunately, he's a lot. And it's kind of 2 years now of this, you know. So, all right. Anyway, so let's take a break and let's get into. We're going to talk a little bit about game week 34. I really do want to think about this clean slate thing though. So the focus is going to be on players and transfers. You know, really drilling down on some choices that you can make to move up or just, you know, solidify your spot. I mean, in some ways this is, I know this is obvious talk, but I think what I'm hoping for here is, you know, for us not to equivocate, right. Sort of like draw some like real clear conclusions here and maybe they're qualified. Maybe the question, you know, maybe the idea is that, you know, if you're, in first place in your mini league, you go with Bruno. If you're in fifth place, you drop him. You know, like I think maybe you could do a little bit of that kind of thinking. So, I don't want to just discuss these players. I want to really think about how you can, like, you know, what you can, what it makes sense to do, depending on your position in the table. So hopefully this doesn't, you know, get too like sloppy. I don't know. It makes sense in my head. We'll see if it makes sense to people who are listening.
Hopefully it doesn't become too much like the Liverpool attack in the second half of Liverpool Newcastle. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point.
Totally. I hope. Yeah, exactly. We'll try to retain our killer instinct. So just a quick shout out to our newest patron, Luke Baker. Thank you. You know, the Patreon support starts to, you know, slow down a little bit, Brandon, as we reach the end of the season. Understandably, of course, only 5 weeks left. And so anyone who wants to support the podcast, it really cheers us up.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Makes our day anytime we get a new Patreon supporter. So thank you to Luke. And if you do want to support the podcast and join a community of more than 500 people and talk every day on the Slack about strategy and fantasy and a billion other things, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. At the highest tiers, you get the Make Fantasy Fun Again t-shirt. Everyone who supports the podcast gets the Week in Review newsletter. And of course, you get an extra podcast each week at the Lord Soroth level, at the Lord Sorloth level and up. And that is just a free bonus pod for all of our patrons. And that one tends to be a little looser and a little more fun. And so, not that this podcast isn't fun, Brandon. I think it's very fun.
I'm having fun.
I feel like on Sunday nights we're often
definitely we're a little more.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, we're definitely very on task for this main podcast. When it comes to our Patreon pod, We're letting it all hang out.
Totally. I mean, we record these on Sunday nights, and typically we've watched hours and hours of matches on Saturday and Sunday, and often Friday too. And you know, and like all the stings, you know, all of the all the pain is still there. You know, as soon as like it probably comes through on the podcast. So anyway, patreon.com/alwayscheating is where you can go to support the cheaters. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Maybe your fantasy team is distracting you from other important parts of your life. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in less than 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, expertise that may not be locally available in many areas, and BetterHelp is worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor, and you'll get timely, thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room again. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, and they can make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. So visit betterhelp.com/cheating. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join the more than 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. And here's a special offer for Always Cheating listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/cheating.
All right, we're back. Game week 34 kicks off on Friday. Southampton Leicester. Kind of interesting, Brandon. This I don't know why. I mean, we've been doing this podcast for a long time, and I don't remember Ramadan. I think the last couple of years it hasn't been a factor, but I'm struggling to remember. Surely there have been seasons that were impacted by Ramadan to the degree that this one is. But yeah. I feel like I was very conscious going into this weekend about the impact of Ramadan on Mo Salah and
Riyad Mahrez, you
know, Wesley Fofana Riyad Mahrez and Fofana was taken off at the 61st minute of the West Brom match. I don't know if that was you know, intentionally he was kept on for the 60 minute clean sheet qualification. Brandon, we don't know. We'll talk to Brendan Rodgers in the offseason about whether he follows the FPL stuff. But I think that's actually an interesting factor because Leicester play tomorrow and Friday. And they're both night matches, so that has to be tough for anybody who is observing Ramadan. I'm not here to talk about Ramadan. I'd love to, but that we'll save that for the Patreon podcast, Brian. We'll go all in on Ramadan this week for our Patreon supporters. So let's kick things off, though. The theme here is preparing for the run-in with a clean slate. And Seth Ryan, okay, so my goal here is a tabula rasa, Brandon, okay? I'm all the gook, all the feelings I have about players, I'm starting fresh, beginning with this pot, okay?
Yeah.
So Seth Ryan says, what teams have the best fixtures and the most to play for, the worst fixtures, and nothing to play for? I like the way he phrased this. Great fixtures, something to play for, bad fixtures, nothing to play for. So it's kind of... Who has some skin in the game and who's on the beach?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. But on top of
have you given this some thought?
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to phrase it because it's like who has skin in the game plus easy fixtures, and that's like let's zero in on the people with the most to play for with the easiest route to FPL points. Now you can that's the annoying argument is always well. The teams who are fighting relegation have the most to play for. Therefore, invest in those teams, even if regardless of the fixtures, because they're going to be going all out to keep their clean sheets to try and score, or maybe not keep the clean sheets, just score as many goals as possible. And then that blinds you to the fact that oh yeah, these are kind of bad teams. So I think Leeds is the team that jumps out at me. I talked last week about, actually, I think this might have been with their patrons, but when I was looking at my wild card, I had three L's. I was looking at Liverpool, Lingard, and Leeds. And Leeds, even after all of the trauma of game week 33, still stands out. Leeds have Brighton, Spurs, Burnley, Southampton, and West Brom. Those five remaining fixtures, Spurs will be a tougher match, but they do play them home at Elland Road. Those are terrific fixtures for Leeds to end. And I just don't feel like Leeds and Bielsa are the type of club that gets onto the beach, that loses sight of what they're playing for. And I think that's what we've admired about these Leeds players all season, is that they are the sum of their parts. Like, when they play as a team, they're really a dynamic, and they're all, and because of that, they all have to really do their job, hold their own. No one can really take their foot off the gas in the starting 11, or else that whole team will kind of fall apart. So even if you were to argue that Leeds don't have a lot to play for, I still think they are one of the most valuable FPL teams during this home stretch. And I'll stand by that. And when I was looking at my wild card for 33, I kept in the back of my mind, how am I going to get Bamford back at least around game week 36? And I've been saying for a while that I think Bamford's form has really dropped off, and it's, you know, he had a one pointer again in game week 33. But I think the thing that makes me bullish on Bamford still is that he continues to start. There was a moment where I thought, you know, Bielsa was he was substituting Bamford earlier and earlier in matches, sometimes at the 45 minute mark. I was like, is Bamford falling out of favor with Bielsa? But he continues to start. So that's assuaged those fears. So I do think Bamford, if Rafinha can get back fit, Stuart Dallas, we don't even need to talk about. But I could even see a triple up on Leeds being Melier, Dallas, and Bamford for the home stretch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's sort of did you end up bringing in Melier? You were talking about him on your wild card. Did you have him?
Ultimately, I did not bring in Melier because I went for Martinez. There was a temptation to do the double up goalkeeper rotation, but my thing, I opted to go for Button, just a 3.9 backup keeper with Martinez, because at some point I will transfer Martinez to Melier. Now, that might sound like ill-advised management, because that's a one of five free transfers I have left that I'll waste on a goalkeeper. But I also felt like it was a waste of budget to bring in both Martinez and Melier. So yeah, that's the logic there.
Yeah, I mean, the on the beach stuff is, I mean, it's funny because, you know, Leeds are kind of a weird in between what we just talked about, which is that they're a team with virtually nothing to play for and great fixtures. And so they're sort of I agree. I mean, I thought it was a very impressive draw today. I mean, they just without Rafinha, I mean, Jack Harris, it's kind of interesting, actually, because it's almost like the way to think about it is more like, who are the players who need a vacation, right? Yeah. Like, who are the players who need some time on the beach to recover? And I feel like the two white boys on Leeds, Patrick Bamford and Jack Harrison, like, those guys need to, like, go, like, down, like, they need to, like, go, like, rent a summer cottage for a month and mm-hmm. just, like, you know, pull themselves back together, because Harrison looks exhausted. Like, it's like he looks so fried out there at the pitch, and you know, and he's trying to fill the Rafinha role too, which probably doesn't help. I mean you know, well, it sort of depends. Rafinha will buzz around both sides, but in Bamford, I agree. I mean, I think there's a good chance I bring him back in, but not until Rafinha comes back. Without Rafinha, I'm not as sold on Bamford, because Rafinha is just such a chance creator, you know, and without him, I'm just not feeling it. But, you know, I think for that Brighton match next week, for example, I'm certainly going to be starting Stuart Dallas. And he's kind of funny. He, like, with his bonus points, like, he needs a goal or an assist, or he will not get a single bonus point. Like, he does nothing on – because, like, he has this kind of free roll, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, I don't think he does anything. And it's like, he doesn't get any, like, blocks, clearances, interceptions. He – very few key passes. It's like, he gets the ball, and it's like – either shooting or he is like, it's like a short pass, you know, to set up a play.
Not even tackles. It's kind of like, you know, sometimes he'll be in a similar position to a player like Kevin De Bruyne, but who will track back and tackle the ball away. But, you know, they've got other people behind Dallas to do that. So, yeah, it's.
So, you know, as far as teams that have, you know, something to play for, I mean, West Ham, I mean, if you think that they still have a chance at a Champions League spot, they have pretty decent fixtures, honestly, throughout the rest of the season. You know, I think the one thing we need to keep in mind here, too, is that because we haven't talked about it too much in this week's podcast, but, you know, by the end of this week, we should know whether there are going to be double game weeks this season. One last into the breach with double game weeks, Brandon. And it looks like there's a very good chance that that is going to happen. And the reason for that is the lifting of the pause. I don't really understand, by the way, how you can have fans at these like cup finals, mm-hmm, right? Like why can you have 10,000 fans at the League Cup final, but the Premier League grounds can't do? Is that like a police, like,
I think, is it
protection issue or something?
Maybe like, Wembley, you know, is that much larger. Like the capacity at Wembley is pretty massive compared to a lot of other grounds.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, that does make sense. Although, I mean, they were pretty tightly packed in there. It wasn't like these fans were all, you know, 35 feet apart or anything like that.
You can't control these football hooligans, Josh.
No, and I can't control Boris Johnson, Brandon. You know, try as they might. Uh-huh. So the reason I bring that up is because there is a reasonable chance that we will have a handful of double game weeks in game week 35. And there are a couple that we are quite sure that we're going to have, like almost like with a near certainty, we think that we're going to have four teams that play twice in game week 35. Now, and to be very clear about this, next week is game week 34. So we're in a classic situation here, Brandon, where we are overlooking the game week in front of us to talk about the one that follows it. You do want to be thinking a couple moves ahead, especially right now, right? Like the Bruno out question is complicated by the fact that there's a good chance that he's going to have a double game week in 35, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, even if his form is bad, I would be nervous about not having him for two matches, you know, in one game week. And so the four teams that we are nearly certain to see play twice in 35 are Aston Villa, Crystal Palace, Everton, Southampton. In the case of Villa and Everton, it is a long overdue to be rescheduled COVID match from, you know, months ago. And the Crystal Palace Southampton match is because of the FA Cup semifinal. And that match was in 33, and that wasn't able to take place because of that. So, or was it 32? Whatever it was. You know, so that was a delayed match that is finally getting replayed now. And so, you know, those four teams will all play. And it's kind of interesting because of those four, Brandon, I only have two Villa players. I don't have anyone from Everton, anyone from Palace, or anyone from Southampton. I'm not sure I will either. No. I mean, maybe you talk to me in a week and I'm going to talk myself into James Ward-Prowse or something, but
no.
I don't know. Unless there's like an injury in my squad, I think, I don't know. I mean, like Ings would be somebody I would consider, right? If Ings were healthy and looked good in game week 34, I might consider it, but the setup that I've got right now, which is the same as yours, I've got Ollie Watkins, Jamie Vardy, and Ian Acho. And those three all are part of this cohort that are expected to play twice in game week 35. And so at that point, I'm like, I'm not going to bring in a Southampton defender. I mean, Crystal Palace arguably have the best game week 35, but you talk about a team that has nothing to play for. I mean, Crystal Palace are just firmly in that kind of just skating through to the end of the season. I mean, I'm reluctant to even talk about them too much because this match, we're recording this before they play Leicester tomorrow. And so let's see how they look tomorrow. You know, if Will, like sometimes Will Zaha is like a man possessed, you know, and he's just like, he's all about winning, you know, it's like he's going to try to win as many penalties as he can in a match. He just sort of disappears the whole time.
I genuinely can't with Crystal Palace, just like can't talk about it. Can't deal with them at all. They seem to be holding their own this season with incredible fortitude, and I respect that. But at the same time, like, this club is so due to be overhauled with players like Zaha, who needs out, Hodgson, who is at death's door, bless his soul, and then the likes of Benteke and Jordan Ayew, which is like, you guys just need to move on with your lives. For me, the it's Lucas Dean is probably and it's a little sour because Dean got his clean sheet this week after I had gotten rid of him on wild card. But he was one of those players where I felt like with Everton, with this possible double in game week 33, he would be worth hanging on to. And it was really interesting about Everton is that they'll double with Aston Villa. Like they have a fixture to make up with Aston Villa. And then they also are scheduled to play Villa in 34.
Yeah.
So you get to see them face up twice in quick succession. And Dean was just too expensive. Like at 6.1, I think he was at this point. For we've really seen him do nothing in the last month. But Everton, you know, yeah. Dean, Richarlison, who has actually been able to find some semblance of form, even though that was a pretty wild goal against Leno. I'll grant you that. I think he's worthy of being looked at just as much as any player from Southampton or Aston Villa.
Yeah, I mean, talk about clean slate, right? I mean, Richarlison, I mean, you know, unfortunately, it feels so long ago now, but that, you know, the comedy own goal in the second half of Everton.
Yeah, I just want to call him Jay Leno, but yeah, Bern Leno, just like it, that was a Keystone Cops moment for sure. And that was a classic, like Richarlison will celebrate anything. He will act like he broke his leg at getting touched. And if he's involved, responsible for anything relating to a goal, he is celebrating for sure and having that smug look on his face.
I know. It was all of the best and worst of Richarlison in one play. I mean, great speed, great, you know, pretty good move. And then just, you know, refusing to pass to anybody.
Yeah.
And so he effectively side foots it to Leno so that Leno can collect the ball and restart the play so that he gets another opportunity to make a great move. And then Leno just sort of forgets to catch it.
By the way, how suicidal has it been for Mikel Arteta to play Xhaka at left back? Like, what is he trying to make happen there? It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, he's just so unimpressed by Cedric, I guess. Is that the issue? That, like, Cedric just cannot be trusted at all? Mm-hmm. It's a weird setup right now, I have to say, with like, holding Callum Chambers, who, like, mm-hmm. back from the dead, Callum Chambers, right? Like, mm-hmm. started four of the last five of the last seven. Wow. He looks old now, too. It's mm-hmm. like, it's such a weird thing. Like, Callum Chambers is, like, somebody who I always think of as this Arsenal youth player who mm-hmm. was getting, like, loaned out. I remember he was at Bournemouth. He was all over the place. And now he's just this kind of, like, 10-year veteran, mm-hmm. you know, who's like, oh, he's still there? He's still at Arsenal?
He's the new Jenkins.
So, I mean, Holding does look good. Jenkinson. Yeah.
Jenkinson.
Carl Jenkinson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jenkinson's like something Jenkins in a county.
I'm thinking of that famous YouTube meme of Leroy Jenkins, but, you know, I digress.
Leroy Jenkins. So, you know, I don't want this to be like a total non-answer here, but I'm not sure that the on the beach ranking system or thinking about who's on the beach or not is hugely helpful, because the kind of players who have nothing to play for tend to be you were talking about this earlier, like, you know, the relegation fodder often, you know, these are not, you know, you sort of you get sucked into the Veltman, you know, thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I have Dan Burn, I didn't even play, right? You know, I brought him in my wild card. Uh-huh. What a waste of it. You know, maybe he'll play next, who knows. You know, you sort of get sucked into this stuff and he's like getting his minutes are being managed. I don't know. Like, it's weird. Like, Brighton, they have a pretty good system now. Like, it feels like you can kind of, it feels like they've plugged in like seven or eight players back there, and it's kind of works no matter who's there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think that, you know, I think the real theme here, I guess, is that I wouldn't focus too much on the beach or doing mm-hmm. on the beach rankings or anything like that. I feel like what I would focus on is just, does the player look like they really need a break? Mm-hmm. And if you're watching a lot of matches, it's pretty clear who is exhausted and who isn't. And Patrick Bamford looks like he is completely fried. Maybe in a couple of weeks with Rafinha back and he scores a goal and it gets his form back or whatever. But, you know, he falls in that category. And I think that, you know, the other player who we have to talk about now is Bruno. Yeah. And, you know, Bruno likely plays twice in 35, but they're not great matches. He plays away to Villa and they host Leicester. And in 34, he's got a not ideal match either, right? They're hosting Liverpool. So And he just looks, I mean, he's, you know, he's just, they make him do so much, right? He never gets a match off. He plays never Europa League match. They, you know, they really won't give him more than, you know, 30 minutes spell. And he's probably, I mean, I wonder how many matches he actually played for Liverpool that, or for Man United this season. I bet it's like, it's got to be over 50, right?
Sure, if you count Europa League and cup matches and everything. And I always think back to the first tie between Manchester United and West Ham earlier in the season, where West Ham were just really dominating Manchester United, having Bruno on the bench. And at halftime, Ole has to bring Bruno on, and then suddenly the team comes alive. And it's yeah. it's these handcuffs that Manchester United have, in that the play, Bruno is so great that they can't really give him a rest.
I was going to say, he has played, it's 51 matches this season. He has logged 4,000 minutes on the pitch this season.
It's incredible. And one of the reasons why I decided to not ditch Bruno on my wild card is that, even though you could say he is in that fried category, is still, when you watch United play, he is always in the hole. He does get chances. He is still unafraid to shoot. He, you know, he's lacking a little bit of that juice, but I just feel like, I don't know, maybe he's moving into that Mo Salah category this season of you're just always believing in the player for their potential and not actually what you've seen over the course of the last 4 weeks. But I just don't see how you can dismiss Bruno at this point, because who are you bringing in? Mason Greenwood has been in some really good form, but you know he's liable to blank just as much as Bruno can, and that team can still function without Greenwood. And if that team can function without Greenwood, but they can't without Bruno, Bruno still, for me, is the better fantasy asset there.
Yeah. Do I think that Bruno is really a better fantasy or a worse fantasy asset than Greenwood? No, but I mean, Greenwood in that match today was so active. I mean, he was certainly the most dangerous player on the pitch. Rashford didn't have a particularly good game. It was like one of those early season Rashford matches where he just had some big chances and, you know, somehow just missed the goal by 2 feet a couple of times. And I mean, Greenwood looks great. I mean, you know, I was sort of thinking about that, what you're about to say, which was, you know, if you don't go Bruno, who do you go to? And, you know, is Greenwood a lateral move? Not necessarily. I mean, if going Bruno to Greenwood lets you upgrade Ollie Watkins to Harry Kane, then maybe that's worth it. You know, like that would be a bold move, right? Like that could pan out. You know, Kane hosts Sheffield and game week 34. And, you know, I currently have Watkins on my bench for game week 34. So that, you know, that's a move that somebody could consider. I think Son is a player who a lot of people have moved off of, because of wild cards, or because they wanted to pick up a Greenwood or something like that. And I think that he is somebody who's got a great run in to end the season. I wish there was a second player that you could pick on Spurs, but it seems like it is just Son. Okay, this one's a little out there, Brandon. So just gird your loins. But what about Gylfi Sigurdsson? Pretty good run in. Very likely to have two matches in game week 35 on free kicks.
Yeah.
You know, would you consider Gylfi?
Yeah, I guess this goes back to what I was saying about Lucas Dean, and the worst thing that happened to Lucas Dean this season was Gylfi Sigurdsson came into great form and Ancelotti actually became reliant on Sigurdsson playing, and that he took so many set pieces away from Dean. And that, that leads me to kind of see what you're talking about there, Gylfi being an option. I guess I'd go for Gylfi over James, because James is not going to take a penalty if Gylfi is on the pitch. And I don't know, it's kind of sort of like James being fit again. He still is kind of receded to Gylfi when Gylfi's particularly when he's playing through the middle.
I'm a little surprised by that too, that James is still deferring to Gylfi on free kicks. But, I mean, you know, Gylfi had a brace just last week, right, at home to Spurs. So clearly, maybe he's just deferring to him because he's just, you know, really in the better form at the moment. But that team is clicking. I mean, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is, I mean, we're talking kind of about midfielders here, but I wouldn't say that I was hugely, I'm kind of with you. You talked about Charleston earlier. I all things being equal, I actually would be, I think, inclined to go with Richarlison over Dominic Calvert-Lewin if I was picking an Everton forward for the run-in.
Yeah, definitely. But we need to go back to Bruno, because I think when we went into this section of the podcast, Josh, you promised the listeners that we were not going to equivocate. We were going to be very firm. And I think to be respectful of AJ's question, this is probably the front of my mind. What is the cut and dry answer for Bruno right now? We both have him. I am in a position where I do want to chase a little bit in my mini league. I think the answer for me is, based on form and function and all that, I have to get rid of Bruno. And then in your position where you're leading the pack in most of your mini leagues, you would keep Bruno. I think that is the pretty firm answer. And yeah, we're talking a lot about if you were to be in my position and drop Bruno, who would you replace him with? But that's kind of what we're saying, though, right? And as far as Bruno is concerned.
Yeah, I think so. I guess De Bruyne is now back and healthy. Maybe he enters the conversation. You know, I saw that you retained a couple of Man City players on your wild card. So you know, Gundogan could be an option, I suppose, in theory. Yeah.
Well, then
you have to look past the price tag sometimes on that stuff.
But me keeping Gundogan on my wild card was kind of with the uncertainty of when Kevin De Bruyne was coming back. You had some suspicion that he'd come back for the final today on Sunday, and there he was. And my whole view of Gundogan is you see the best of Gundogan from a fantasy point of view when Kevin De Bruyne has been out injured. So KDB being back, and Gundogan and KDB being part of Pep's perfect 11 and the perfect 11 that Pep is going to want to play, especially in the Champions League, from here on out, it's looking kind of grim for my Gundogan pick on wildcard. I think he will be one of the first to make way. And I have 1.4 in the bank. So Gundogan could even move to Greenwood.
Turn into Gilfy.
Or Gilfy.
Greenwood or Gilfy, Brandon.
Yeah, the two G's.
Yeah.
We've gone from the three L's to the two G's.
And the only issue with Greenwood is just there's a little bit of a Europa League concern, you know, just because it's a little bit like... A little bit like the Man City thing where you're like, am I going to, there's only 5 weeks left. Right. So you don't really want to make a transfer on a player who's going to miss one or two of those. Right. Cause this is one of the reasons I didn't go for Mendy on my wild card is I didn't want the risk, you know, like let's say even if he starts 4 to 5, you know, suddenly which one? You know, it's like you can just have him covered by a perfect player every week because you just don't know who that person would be, you know? And so I think that makes it really, really tricky. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think Greenwood is the player that I would be looking at too. I may go Jota to Greenwood in game week 35. I think that would be a possibility just because Man United do play twice. And Greenwood just seems like a higher quality player to go with than Gilfy. I mean, Gilfy has had a nice little run and he did have a brace a couple weeks ago, but he still only has, you know, 6 goals and 4 assists in the season. I mean, you're not exactly, you know, investing in some major blue chip fantasy asset. And so if you're going to drop Jota for that, you really need to, who has been kind of unlucky, right? I mean, I don't know it's kind of frustrating because I don't really know what to do with him. I don't know if you have any thoughts on what to David. One of the questions we got was for David asking, is it time to say goodbye to Jota? And it's like, we kind of saw this when he was at Wolves, right? And it felt like maybe he'd great underlying stats, super attacking, lots of shots on target. Seems like a great fantasy asset. And then the numbers didn't quite add up. And so, you know, what are your thoughts on Jota right now?
I'd like to get rid of him, and I think it's what I was saying at the top of the pod of my feelings on Liverpool right now, in that Liverpool had a bit of a bait and switch over the last couple of weeks, and while I still believe that Liverpool will be capable of pretty good FPL returns here and there, it's like how I was waffling on Lacazette over the last month. Ultimately, I did bring in Lacazette, but at one point I was like, ooh, Lacazette in pretty good form. And then Lacazette blanks. And then you say, well, this is the thing with Arsenal. The problem with them will always be they're unpredictable. They're unreliable. You wouldn't say the same thing about Liverpool until you get to this point in the season where you're like, Liverpool are kind of Arsenaling it this season. And that has become my issue with Diego Jota right now. And I feel like Jota, when he came into the Liverpool squad, was actually the secret sauce. When Jota played, Liverpool actually had some sort of attacking chemistry that they were missing at the start of the season. Mm-hmm. However, like the overall Arsenal-ness that I'm talking about has just seemed to have seeped so far into Liverpool right now that I just kind of want to back away from them. I'm willing to actually stick with Salah because I don't know, just like long-term bias.
Scores like every match.
That sort of a thing. But as I was saying about how I intend to make fantasy fun for me for the next 5 weeks is looking at these mid-range players where they are possibly interchangeable. And Liverpool, Jota's form is not existent, and that is probably down to the fact that Liverpool haven't gotten any true form, attacking form going. Therefore, he's got to go. So my feeling on Jota is no. I've got to move on and find something different.
Yeah, I mean, this is where the overall rank thing, I think, can really force you into being really uncreative and actually not doing yourself a service, you know, in this game where it's sort of like, well, Jota should probably go, but I see that his effective ownership is 78% in the top 10K. And so therefore I should keep him because it just hurts me too much to drop him. Or, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you get in this trap of just being like super boring, you know, just and not even like actually helping your team. You know, you're just like, I mean, part of, you know, I typically the reason that you're having a good season is because you're able to, you've moved a little faster than other people, right? Yeah. And you've gotten in a week or two early. And, you know, and there's always, you know, there's often a little bit of risk there. I mean, you know, Jamie Vardy is suddenly a very popular pick, but, you know, when I brought him in 2 weeks ago, you laughed at me on the pod.
I did.
You know, you thought it was hilarious, uh-huh. You know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, this is, you know, so I think you do have to kind of, I'm kind of with you. Like if I was on a wild card right now, I would absolutely have Greenwood over Jota too. And Jota looks good, but he also looks kind of frustrated. Right. And like we talked about, plenty of already in this pod. I mean, I don't want to just repeat everything you just said, but like, yeah, like there's like a lack of killer instinct on that team right now. And so you don't really trust the returns that you're going to get. And it does feel like Man United are, I mean, they're kind of an interesting spot because it feels like they're just kind of locked in that second place now. Right. You know, it's sort of, I don't know, could they even like drop below second? I mean, I'm not sure they could, you know, and sort of, a weird fixed spot. Like at some point, does it, you know, do they just kind of go all in on the Europa League? I mean, I don't really know. I mean, you know, is that something that they would really value? Or is the goal just to get as many points as they can in the Premier League and kind of, you know, put down a marker for next season? It's sort of, I think it's a difficult one to answer.
Yeah, it is. And which brings us, let's transition to Spurs. And I want to talk about Boston Prof's question. Okay. Is getting Son a must this week? I don't have him, just Kane. Could swap Son for Bruno. Or for Jota with a hit, downgrading Stones to nobody. Thoughts? So after seeing Spurs' non-performance against Manchester City in the final on Sunday today, where Kane came back from injury, and that does worry me a little bit if you're targeting Son, because that connection, that counter-attacking style that was so good for Son and Kane earlier in the season seems to have dried up a bit. Son on your wild card, and I'm a little worried about Spurs here, where they're just as you were just saying, where what is the end goal now that they've lost their chance for a trophy, now that they're effectively managerless and with really no view of what the future is. Maybe some players getting restless and wondering about some contract negotiations and et cetera. I even though Spurs are home Sheffield United in 34, the only single Spurs player I would be saying is a must own or even worth targeting would be Harry Kane. Son, I'm less sure about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure about him either. I mean, part of it is it comes back to that midfield question that we talked about earlier, like. You kind of run out of options at some point as you go through the midfield. You're like, okay, like I'm sort of I had a hard time getting to like more than five or six players I really wanted to fill up my midfield. And so Son sort of just made more sense than keeping Kane, just from a, you know, he's cheaper. And, you know, a couple of days ago, we didn't really know where Kane was, right? I mean, the talk was that he wasn't going to be healthy enough to play in the final, ended up playing the full 90 minutes. Now, granted, he didn't do anything in that match. I mean, it was talk about XG. I think I hate even talking about XG because it proves what an actual moron I am, that I like really, I just throw out numbers for it. I'm like, oh, the XG was 7. I think it was like, you know, it was like 2.9 to 0.04 or something like that. I mean, it was basically Spurs created nothing the entire match. And so, but I don't know, maybe, you know, the home to Sheffield United is a different story. And I felt like, I actually think that Son, and, you know, we could talk about this just briefly, is, you know, I think that Son or Kane may be the best captain picks this weekend. I mean, I think that you'd look at the Leicester forwards and Son and Kane. And is there anyone else that you would strongly consider captaining this weekend?
No, not really right now. My bus team, my captain is on Jamie Vardy, God rest my soul. And I have a vice captaincy on Mo Salah. I don't know. Liverpool, Manchester United, at least there's some fire in that fixture. And Salah, all, you know, the personal goals that he may have that we've discussed. So, yeah, I totally agree. If you have the Spurs players, if you have Son or Kane, that would be my leading candidate for captaincy. So for me, I would be looking to get Harry Kane in probably for a -4, but because I think that Jamie Vardy is fine for a captaincy option, we'll see what happens against Crystal Palace. I don't see why I would take a hit just to bring in another captain option.
No, I'm with you there. Iheanacho as well. Honestly, he's probably looked even better than Vardy the last few weeks. Even in that match a few days ago, on Thursday's match, I thought that even though Vardy was the one who ended up with more points than Iheanacho, Iheanacho really could have had a hat trick in that match. I mean, he was incredible, and just a little bit unlucky, maybe shot a little bit too fast in a couple of instances. But although the one goal he scored was incredibly patient with some great build-up play from Vardy. So yeah, I think you're right. I think those are two great options. Son, home to Sheffield. I mean, he was like, you know, I felt bad for him. I mean, he was actually got emotional on the pitch at the end of the League Cup final. He really wanted to win that match for Spurs. And he's just an easy guy to like. And so I don't see him being the kind of player that's just going to switch off the last few weeks of the season. You know, I think that he's really going to keep pushing. And I think they also, you know, they really want to get Ryan Mason some wins. I know it was really important to them when they got the late win last week, the come from behind victory over Southampton. So I think that I think that Son, he's the player that I'm kind of leaning towards right now. I don't know how much of that is that I just don't like to captain a player in the first match of a game week. I mean, I don't know that like as a decision that really is particularly smart or strategic. It's just something I don't like to do. And I like the idea of having like 3 days to sort of look forward to my captain delivering. We all remember what happened the last time the Leicester went to Southampton, right? I think that was a 9-0 match.
It sure was.
So maybe I should rethink things a little bit.
It all depends on when that Southampton red card inevitably comes. Does it come early in the match? Then yeah, that's a 9-0.
All right, Brian, two bonus questions for you. The first one is from Kill Rack League. Okay. Uh-huh. I don't know. That was the Twitter at there.
Creative.
He says, what team is the worst FPL team and why is it Arsenal?
I couldn't agree with you more, Kill Rack League. As somebody who brought in Lacazette going into game week 32, after kind of warning myself to not do it. It's a disaster. And I think I touched upon this earlier of what you ultimately want. And I hate to make this like passionless, very like algorithmic viewpoint of fantasy, but all you want is a sure thing when it comes to fantasy. That's why, you know, teams like Liverpool and City over the last couple of years have been so great because they consistently score goals and keep clean sheets. Arsenal are the antithesis of consistency. It's why we talked for 10 minutes about Chris Wood, why his performance against Wolves is so vexing, because you want to believe as a good fantasy manager, you could see that coming. And every time Arsenal start to convince you and you say, all right, I can see a particular Arsenal performance coming and I'm going to use this to my advantage as a fantasy manager, they do what Arsenal often do, is that they don't deliver on a performance. They don't cash the check that they wrote. So, yeah, whether it is Arsenal specifically, I think that is the thing that you're like the broader issue that we're getting at here is just this unreal level of unpredictability.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, the unpredictability is actually worse than heavy rotation. You know, when the players who actually play, I mean, in Tuchel's case, I think the attack has been a little hard to invest in, but defensively it's like, okay, like, yeah, there's rotation, just get two defenders, you know, like there's a good chance that those two will start most of the time. And if not, you're going to get one, but they just are so solid back there that you just want to do it. Then you're going to get returns, right? If they play, you'll get returns. And so it's a little different than you just don't know it at all what you're going to get. Right. Yeah. And that, you know, if you get in, I mean, Aubameyang, obviously the season's, he has been a terrible year, but you know, in previous seasons, right, he'd end up with 20 goals in the course of a season, but it would take him, you had to invest in him for 13 weeks to get there, right? You know, like you never, like to get great returns, you had to like go be in for the long haul and you could never captain him because you never trusted, you know, which match. I mean, Ollie Watkins has been a little frustrating to me. We didn't even talk about the assist that was or wasn't. And I don't want to get into it at this point in the pod, but like whatever, like, you know, it's just like, it's fantasy. This isn't real life. Like, you know,
sure.
Like, yeah. Like it's an intended target. It's close enough. Like,
yeah.
I have Watkins. I'm biased. Sure. Like,
right. That. But I think what you could say to that, and who would argue that fantasy should just be producing more points? If more fantasy managers get more points, I mean, obviously that could be destructive to your mini league lead. If you don't have Ollie Watkins and Boohoo, it's not fair and all that sort of thing. But more goals, more assists, more everything. More anything, more everything.
Yeah, you and I had an eye-opening experience last summer. We did Fantasy Bundesliga, and you just got like points for doing things well on the pitch. And it was like revelatory. Yeah. It was like you could just be a midfielder who did things well. And you're like, oh, wow. Like you actually get rewarded for that. Like, you pick players who are actually good in the game. Yeah. That is like really helps you. It's like N'Golo Kante would be like a proper fantasy asset, I feel like, in Bundesliga. But I was going to say about Watkins, just that he's – it's not, you know, I mean, he's actually having a fine season, but he to me is one of those players who is inconsistent. Like I would never captain Ollie Watkins, right? Because it's like, he's the kind of player who's going to have his best match on the road to a top six team. And like, or, you know, or like you just don't know. And it's like, and then he'll play the worst team at home and fail to deliver any attacking returns. It's like, you just kind of don't know what you're going to get with him.
But with Aston Villa, you would
the aggregate number is good.
But with Aston Villa, you'd actually want to captain Emi Martinez, because if you want to talk about consistency, there you go. I mean, where has he been the last couple of weeks? I don't know. But Aston Villa, I hear what you're saying about Ollie Watkins. What I've loved about Aston Villa this season, even without Jack Grealish, you at least there's some baseline. You know, there are good Aston Villa performances this season with and without Grealish, and then there are kind of moderate. There is never really a truly bad Aston Villa performance, even though they're kind of operating on a different wavelength than Arsenal. So that's like, I still feel comfortable with Villa as a fantasy team.
No, I do too. It's just I couldn't resist a little dig at Watkins.
Fair enough.
Maybe because he missed a clear breakaway opportunity in today's match, and I'm still smarting from it. I guess the phantom assist though even things out. All right, so this is a final question. This is just for fun, Brandon. This is from one of our Patreon supporters in the Slack. He says, "Which two teams do you think will complete the top four this season, along with the Manchester clubs? Do you think the likes of Liverpool and Spurs can turn around and win all of the remaining games? Do you think Everton might have a chance to be in the top four or five with their favorable run of fixtures to end the season?" So if you pull up that old Premier League table, Brandon, PremierLeague.com, right, where all the stars come out to shine.
Yeah.
And you look and see where we are on the table here. We've got Leicester. Yes. So again, yeah, I'm really, I talked about this briefly in the pod. I didn't have the table pulled up at that time. Man United are 8 points clear of Leicester, though Leicester do have a game in hand. Although I find it hard to imagine that Man United would surrender 5 points to Leicester, assuming that Leicester win tomorrow. It could happen, but it's unlikely. And so you have Leicester at 59 points, Chelsea at 58, and then you've got West Ham and Liverpool. I suppose Spurs and Everton are there too. So basically it's from fifth through eighth, you're at 55, 54, 53, 52. And, you know, my feeling is that things are pretty locked in at this point. I suspect that Leicester and Chelsea will get those final two spots. I really hope that Leicester don't blow it again like they did last season. That would be really heartbreaking for their supporters.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think Leicester will have learned. Okay, so on the one hand, you think Leicester will have learned so much from that experience at the end of last season. However, similar to Liverpool, Leicester have had difficulty accounting for the number of critical injuries that they've had to go through, from Harvey Barnes and James Justin to James Maddison being playing very intermittently. That said, with the game in hand that Leicester have as we record ahead of Leicester Crystal Palace, I think Brendan Rodgers will get them across the finish line. And Tuchel's just totally flexing all over Europe right now with what he's doing with Chelsea in the Champions League and here in the Premier League. He just doesn't seem like he's going to let this club slip either. And David Moyes and West Ham, is that going to be the setup that you pick to pip Chelsea? No, it's not. Liverpool too disjointed. Spurs don't have a manager. Everton just don't have the firepower. So I think the best bet is the table is locked right now with City, United, the other City.
What a boring answer.
Chelsea. You know, I'm sorry, it's boring, like, but yeah, it is. That's
No. I said the same thing. I mean, if you and I were big supporters of these clubs, that would be different. I mean, you're a Fulham supporter and you're just kind of seeing this thing out. I mean, at this point, I guess. What, you're seven? Oh. Brighton are seven clear with five to go.
No, the biggest challenge for Fulham is not finishing in 19th place, which almost looks like an inevitability at this point, given the form that West Brom are on right now. Yeah. I think that's actually a wilder question to think about is what are the positions going to be 18, 19, 20? Like Sheffield United, will be 20. I think Fulham finished 19th, West Brom 18th.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one thing that you can say is that at least the way things worked out with Brighton and Newcastle, if you had won that Arsenal match, it probably still wouldn't have made a difference, right? even that Wolves win late a couple weeks before, that would only give you an extra 3 points and you'd still be four back of Brighton at this point. So, you'd be in a tough spot no matter what.
Yeah. As soon as Traore scored on us in that 93rd minute, we were down. That was all there was to it. And you talk about like players like Bamford and Jack Harrison being fried. When that Traore goal went in against Fulham, suddenly the mask fell and you saw how absolutely fried every single one of those Fulham players were. Yeah. And I think they're just going to continue to collapse for the rest of the season.
Don't look at on the beach, look at personal fatigue. I wish Brandon would get heart monitors going. You want to need to go to the pitch and install some. But I mean, I think that you get, you know, maybe to bring it all home here. I mean, I think that what you had this weekend was, I mean, there were 33 weeks into the season and Chelsea and West Ham, like West Ham, a team that has struggled with relegation at times, right? In recent seasons, like they were playing for a Champions League spot maybe inevitably it was not going to, I mean, I don't want to say inevitably, but it was likely not going to work out. But the fact that they were in that position is what was so cool, right? And it's like, I think most fans understand, I mean, you know, I'm a Michigan, I went to Michigan State. I'm a Michigan State football and basketball fan. And our football team is never going to beat Alabama or whatever, right? Like, we're never going to like beat the absolute top clubs that just like, you know, in college football, you know, recruiting is kind of the equivalent of having, you know, like Middle Eastern oil money, right? It's just like, it just gives you such a gigantic advantage that it's very hard to overcome. I just want to be like competitive. I just, you know, it's like, I want to like pick up, you know, a bunch of wins, maybe win a couple games that we shouldn't. And it's like, I don't need to be the absolute best, but I do want that juice of like, we got close or we tried or we got, you know, we got into the show and, you know, we made the college football playoff a few years ago. And it's kind of like making a Champions League spot. You know, it's like, you just want to be there once, you know, and just sort of like get there. It doesn't matter if you lose once you're there.
Oh yeah. And Fulham is a great example of that. They made it to Europa League final, more than a decade ago. It can happen. This is what was so aggravating to me about the Super League arguments of pro Super League people being like, well, what do you non-Super League clubs want? Like, what do you think you're actually competing for? Why do you want to preserve the pyramid? And this idea that it's only valuable to be a fan and to follow a team if you're going to win a trophy. Some people just want to watch a game and be electrified by it and by supporting a team. You know, whether you win, maybe it's just about winning that particular game, regardless of the competition or the opposition.
Yeah. Some people just, I mean, people obviously just want to be, and I don't want to rehash all the Super League stuff again, but people just love to be part of a community, and winning is just sort of, it has to be there. Like, you have to like, have to feel like it means something. But I think about our friend Paul Pryor, who got us tickets to this Leicester match last season. And, you know, it was an incredible experience in walking with him there. I mean, it was like, you could really see that it was just, there were kids everywhere, and it was a community of fans and people who all had known each other for years and years and years. And, you know, winning is just like this thing that has to be there. That's like the goalposts or whatever. Right. Like it's just, but it really isn't about that, but you do need to have, it's like, you can't, otherwise you're just going to the park or something, you know, like you're not going to get 40,000 people to go to a park. Like there has to be some stakes, even if you kind of
tell
know.
That's a Simon and Garfunkel, Josh.
And obviously Leicester won the league too. So, I mean, in some ways I'm almost picking the worst example, right? Because they're like, they won the whole thing. Right. And so you have to like, know that sometimes that's going to like, that you also have the possibility of doing that. And yeah, maybe it's only going to happen once every 20 years, but it can happen. I don't know. You know, it's, this year was a year where that maybe could have happened. I mean, Man City were way back for a long time. They're going to end up winning the league with, you know, far from a record setting number of points. Right? I mean, they lost at home to 10 man Leeds. You know, like this was a season when somebody could have won it. And, you know, clearly with Everton and Leicester competing, that you had a, you know, competing for Champions League spot, at least it felt competitive to me this season. It did not feel like, there was a point where it became like, okay, very clear that Man City were going to win the league. But I found this season from a like match to match perspective to be pretty interesting. Like, you know, I didn't really know how it was all going to shake out in the end.
True. And I think that's led to a lot of frustrations from a fantasy point of view, because it has been so wild and and so competitive. And so that's kind of where you have to be able to separate the fantasy brain from the, hey, you know what? The season has actually been rewarding because it has been so just one of a kind.
Yeah. May it never happen again.
Please, God.
all right. Well, on that note, that is our, I didn't even want to call it a Game Week 34 preview, because it almost feels like it was a final 5 weeks of the season preview, a little discussion of what was to come down the pipeline here. And, you know, part of that is because I think, you know, tomorrow's Leicester match will be telling a little bit. I didn't want to talk about captains too much until we see what happens tomorrow. I mean, if Vinicius scores another brace tomorrow or something, I think it's going to be very hard to resist captaining him on Friday. But once again, thank you to everyone who supports the podcast on Patreon or gives us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. And Brandon, do you want to do a quick shout out to our producer patrons?
Yeah, I'd love to. Big thanks to our producers, Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, DeBig Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wagner-Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forberg Skogang, Paul Herzig, Kaya Christine Lalang, Andy Portlock, Toothless Given, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, at FPL Merch, Kerry Swanson, Kieran Screeton, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Mikey Uong, Bruce Kerr, Nicholas Vernadakis, Sam Schauer, Will Husby, Rich Evans, Future Media Group FPL, Ben Sweeney, George Kinney, Shiv Morjoria, Ram Frosk, and AJ. And don't forget, rate, review, and subscribe to Always Cheating wherever you get your podcast. Give us a 5-star there on Apple Podcasts. That helps the podcast a huge deal. Follow us across social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're everywhere. And send us an email with your lengthy missives, hailcheaters@gmail.com. For all of this information and more, visit our website, alwayscheating.com. That'll do it for us, right, Josh?
That's right. Thanks, everybody. Good luck this week. Bye.
Poku forever.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.